Hey, what's up, everybody?
And welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast, episode 328. And it's 2025.
Can you believe it?
I cannot. My brain is still in like 2017, 2018, 2020.
Are people in the future going to look back and call this like the 20s?
I've always wondered that, probably.
The 20s, the 30s?
Yeah, I'd assume so.
I do too. It's just kind of weird to think about that we're living through the 20s.
It's the roaring 20s.
Yeah, definitely the roaring 20s.
Yeah, well, shit's been pretty wild since 2020. What a roller coaster it's been the last 5 years. But anyway, guys, we're happy to be back. We hope you guys all had a great break. And we are starting off the year with a pretty heavy episode, a very needed episode, a topic that must be talked about more. We're going to be specifically talking about the suspicious death of Private First Class Denisha Montgomery Smith, and also just the general cover-up of military sexual assault and what a massive problem it is. Some of the progress that's being made, a lot of the progress that still needs to be made, and just maybe some things that you didn't know, because it's pretty mind-blowing when you look into things.
Yeah, the statistics are shocking.
It is.
And it seems like, especially for women of color, women just in general.
Yeah, but especially women of color.
It is a very dangerous place to work.
Mm-hmm. It's really an epidemic.
And, you know, prior in last year, we talked about just how the military covers up nefarious activities within the military, specifically around Pat Tillman.
Yeah, yep.
And his
death. I think
that
was my favorite episode of 24.
But if that cover up wasn't bad enough, we're going to get into the military sexual assault issue that is a very frustrating one, because it often feels helpless, especially for civilians, to do anything about it other than, I guess, talk to our elected officials. That's really all you can do, and hope that legislation continues to get passed that creates more transparency within the military. And also this concept of holding the military accountable for crimes that occur within their own ranks. And this is a systemic issue that's been going on since the very beginning of the United States military. But it seems like, you know, we've been able to chip away with, you know, we'll talk about a piece of legislation that was passed fairly recently in the last couple of years that definitely helps a bit. But there's still a long way to go to really solve this issue.
You know, and it's not just an issue that civilians feel helpless about, but especially people who are serving that don't know how to handle it, because they're afraid of being punished, really, at the end of the day, and are afraid to speak up, afraid, you know, to speak up even for somebody else because of how you could be treated. So it's just really such a massive problem that I don't think is spoken about enough. I don't think enough people understand just how widespread and horrific it actually is. But yeah, I've been wanting to cover Denisha's case for a while. I heard about it a little while back, and it is just, it's so sketchy. It's
incredibly sketchy. And I think when you know the details of this case, and this actually takes place overseas, which is interesting, because you have German law enforcement investigating her death initially, and their findings are far different than the actual military's investigation that's conducted and what they tell the family. So it's just, there's red flags everywhere. It's been shocking to me that they've been able to sweep this under the rug and virtually nothing's been done about it. And those involved aren't even named. We don't even know who those people are because they're protecting those people. I think the big issue too is just the power dynamic within the military is completely lopsided. You know, if you're in, you know, higher up in the chain of command, you're virtually, you know, untouchable. But if you're, you know, somebody in the lower ranks, you're especially vulnerable to things. And because you're,
especially as a woman.
And your job is dependent upon what you're, you know, higher ranking officers think of you, and and they protect each other. It's kind of a similar environment to what we see in some police departments, it feels like, you know, kind of this you know, coat of arms, this, you know, protecting your brothers in blue type of feel. It kind of, it's a little similar to that, but just far, far worse, I would say.
Yeah. And it's so heartbreaking, because Denisha, wonderful human, wonderful mother, mother of three.
wife.
And yep, so close with her family. She's just missed by so many. And I can't even imagine how you begin to grieve, you know, when you're going through an experience where you're not even getting the answers. You know that you're being fed bullshit. And how are you even supposed to move on? And her family is fighting. So yeah, I just wanted to spread her story and make sure more people are aware. But before we get into the episode, of course, I'm Kendall. This is Josh.
I'm Josh.
And we are joined by Just Ian today. Happy to have you here, Ian.
Happy to be here as always.
Poor Jan. Poor Janelle. She's real sick today and could not make it. And Ian just got over sickness as well. So we're happy at least you were able to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to. You know, 5 days on the couch. It can do a lot to a person. So it's yeah. good to be outside again.
You got the COVID. Pretty brutal.
It's still out there, guys. It's real as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. God, that's so terrible. I can't believe we've never had COVID. Very grateful for that.
Yes, definitely. But let's go ahead and get into Denisha's story and what happened.
So Denisha was born and raised in Elizabethtown, Kentucky by her parents, Rodney Montgomery, and also her mother, Heather Clark. Denisha is one of three sisters, Brooklyn and Jada as well. And she was very, very close with the two of them and also her entire extended family. It seemed like they have, I mean, just a wonderful family who really all supports each other and is very involved in each other's lives.
A military family at that.
Yep. And Denisha loved Elizabethtown. And the family was involved really in the community through the First Baptist Church in Hodgenville. Denisha's mother, Heather, said that, quote, Denisha had a love for her town and her community. She wanted to make Elizabethtown a better place for everybody. Denisha always had an interest in forensics and also dreamed of one day becoming an Elizabethtown police officer. However, after high school, she met and fell in love with a man named Joshua Smith. And the two of them immediately started their young family. Josh said that Denisha was, quote, a perfect person. I love how he described her that way. That she was a devoted wife and mother to her three children, Josiah, Judah, and Jordan. And Denisha's younger sister, Brooklyn, had also fallen in love around this time. And as Brooklyn explained to the Military Murders podcast, which is excellent if you ever want to check it out, the two men were waiting to see who would propose first. And Joshua did end up proposing to Denisha first. And of course, she said yes. And then Brooklyn's partner, you know, wanted to wait until after Denisha's wedding to not steal her thunder, her attention. But in a moment of serendipity, Brooklyn was the one who caught the bouquet at Denisha's wedding. And that pretty much sealed the deal.
It was also around this time that Denisha started asking Brooklyn and their Aunt Tamika about their time in the Army. Denisha hadn't given up on her dream to become a police officer, but she did have to take up some odd jobs and, you know, did whatever she had to do in order to support her family in the years after she graduated high school. So like I mentioned before, Denisha had come from a military family. Brooklyn had joined after high school and their Aunt Tamika had served in the Army for 13 years and had even been awarded the Purple Heart. For Denisha, not only would the military allow her to support her family as they could live on the base, but also it would give her the necessary experience to return to Elizabethtown and become a police officer, as a lot of people do. A lot of veterans end up becoming police officers, especially military police officers.
Yeah, and especially that really was her ultimate goal, her dream.
Yeah, come back, serve your community, make a difference. Love that. So in January 2021, Denisha joined the 139th Military Police Company and moved her young family to Fort Stewart, Georgia. Denisha enjoyed her time with the military police, or the MPs as they're called, in Fort Stewart, and her family quickly acclimated to base life. Compared to bases like Fort Bragg or Fort Hood, Fort Stewart was relatively peaceful, and Denisha could keep in contact with her family back home in Kentucky and her sister Brooklyn, of course, who was stationed elsewhere. However, after only being stationed at Fort Stewart for 5 months, Denisha got word that she was going to be rotated with the 139th Military Police Company to an American base in Wiesbaden, Germany, for a 9-month stay. Wiesbaden was a typical first deployment overseas, and since it was a friendly region, her family wasn't all that worried that Denisha was going to see combat. Still, Russia had just invaded Ukraine, and not only was Denisha worried about potential U.S. involvement in Ukraine's defense, But it would also be the first time that she had to leave her family behind for service.
That'd be, I mean, so hard to leave everyone in your family, but especially when you have three young children.
So yes, she could support them financially while stationed in Germany, but Denise's children were described as, quote, her whole world. So obviously very, very difficult to leave them behind and be away from them.
Tamika really reassured her about the whole thing. I mean, many U.S. soldiers join in the first place to travel the world, and Wiesbaden, the base, had been described as an enjoyable first assignment. So she would be able to make friends with other MPs in the unit and that the 9 months would just fly by. So she was feeling okay about it heading in. So in May of 2022, Denisha packed up her things and was assigned to the Lucius Clay Kaserne, which is actually just German for barracks, correct?
Yeah. So like military police, they are often assigned to basically just watch over and police specific barracks at the base. So they're not like running operations throughout. They're just more or less doing typical police assignments throughout the barracks, making sure everything's running in order.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, they do a lot of the, actually, there was a time I wanted to be a military police officer because I knew it'd be great experience to become a police officer. But mm-hmm. what they do, traffic stops, you know, if people get disorderly, they break up fights, that kind of stuff. You know, they're maintaining peace with on the base is really what their job is, mm-hmm. and protecting the base.
So she was headed to Wiesbaden, and things were pretty normal at first. Denisha really enjoyed seeing Germany, of course. It's a beautiful country, but definitely expressed that she was homesick for her family and friends back in the States. Very understandable. But she routinely called home, and her family and friends said that no matter how much she missed home and her family, that she did not seem depressed, which is important to note. According to the CID investigation, which is really, really sketchy, but we'll get into that later, Denisha argued with one of her fellow bunkmates in the barracks over the volume of the music that she was playing. However, this was the only negative remark that was left on Denisha's report. Everyone said that she really followed orders and did her job well, even though she was missing home. Then on July 19th, Denisha left the base for the first time to go to a water park, kind of theme park situation. And this had been her first day of R&R, which is rest and recuperation. And she was really excited to spend it with her unit and go do something fun and kind of relaxing. So she drove there with five fellow military police officers, including her bunkmate. And the group ended up drinking pretty heavily at the water park and then drove back to the base a few hours later.
Which that kind of stuck out to me. I mean, I don't water parks here. Can you get alcohol?
I don't
think I've seen that.
I'm sure it's some.
I feel like that is a major risk.
I mean, well,
I guess at theme parks, they have alcohol. So, and it is Germany. They do love their beer there. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's possible
but
that they had
drunk.
They may have brought alcohol.
True.
Too.
That's true.
I don't really know. We didn't really get details about how they got the alcohol. They may have gotten it there though. Who knows? But bottom line is they were drinking. But then on the drive back, the driver pulls the car over and all four of her fellow soldiers, including her female bunkmate, began assaulting her, and it was absolutely brutal. They pinned her in the back seat while they restrained her arms, striking her limbs, and then burning her shoulder with what appears to be a cigarette. And
there's a picture of the wound, and
it's bad.
It's gnarly.
It's really bad.
I can't think of anything else that it could be.
Yeah, it looks like a burn for sure.
Or maybe like a cigarette lighter in the car or something, possibly. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, but it does look like a burn. And then Denisha tried to defend herself. She bit one of the men. And then, quote, was mushing the face of her bunkmate, which essentially, if you didn't know what mushing means, just kind of like pushing up on her
face.
Push her away. Yeah. And that her bunkmate had joined in on the assault as well. And still, all of that, all of her efforts were not enough to stop the violence. And the attack didn't stop until they started the car again.
When Denisha returned home, she FaceTimed her family and asked them to screen record the call to make a record of her injuries, which was very smart. So we actually have a clip showing a little bit of that call.
And I would just give a little warning going forward with the rest of the episode too. We will be displaying, and we'll give you a heads up before we get to it. But I mean, all of this is very disturbing, this entire episode, but especially hearing her talk about these experiences, and then you will be seeing some of it as well later on. So just proceed with caution. And just a heads up too, this is all footage that comes from, well, some of it comes from News Nation. This specific clip comes from ABC News, and her family was involved with this report as well. So I think it's important that we would debate it on whether or not to show you guys all of this. That maybe would be just too disturbing. But I think given the gravity of this situation, people need to see what happened and what she was actually experiencing to really understand the gravity here.
As one person in the front records and another watches, just hours after the alleged assault, Denisha FaceTimed her family in tears, asking them to record their conversation.
I'm going to talk to CID tomorrow. I don't trust them. I don't trust my leadership. I don't want to be here with none of them no more.
Her father calling the Red Cross while the family was still on the phone with Denisha, asking for their help to bring his 27-year-old daughter home.
She's scared for her life, and I need for her to try to come home or something. They took her out and covered her nose. We need some help. Ma'am, please, immediately.
Hi, honey. Mom.
Yeah.
Mom, I want to come home. Mom, this is all I wanted to do. Look.
Wow.
I have more and more of that kitty popping up. I just want
Brooklyn, a burn mark, we believe, on her shoulder, like a cigarette got burned on her. Her face was just bruised, swollen. Yeah. She was
literally like fighting for her life. Bad.
And I believe her when she says that she was assaulted, sexually assaulted, scared for her life, when all she wanted to do is come home. All I need is someone to believe that.
I thought I was
going to
die in the car, bro.
The pure fear in her voice, it just especially breaks my heart when she gets on with her mom, and you can tell just how terrified she is, and the heartbreak that, you know, this is all I wanted to do, and for it to be turning out this way is just beyond devastating.
And it's a key point that she says, I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
Because yep. I think that speaks to the severity of the assault as well as the mm-hmm. injuries, obviously.
And you can tell just from the way that she's acting that fear,
yeah.
that was very real for her.
And what's even crazier is that the whole assault was captured on camera, which we'll show you kind of a censored version of that mm-hmm. later. Mm-hmm. But it was literally recorded. So there's video evidence of this assault.
Yep.
Which makes this even more crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll blow your mind. Make as you we angry, man. To go through this.
So, like mentioned in the clip, Denisha's father contacted the Red Cross during the FaceTime call in an attempt to get her moved back to Fort Stewart to be with her family in Georgia. And either the Red Cross did not reach out to her military company in Germany, or the military police just never made a record of that contact. But we don't know. Virtually nothing was done. Which it's crazy that they even have to go to an outside organization like Red Cross yeah. mm-hmm. for help when really feel like there should be an emergency contact within the military
you
for this type
think,
of stuff. Like, why doesn't the military have a human resources department that is, you know, there to reach out in these types of events so that somebody can, you know, make this emergency known mm-hmm. and do something about it and remove this person from the situation? That's baffling to me. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, I'm not in the military myself, and I'm not an expert, but I can tell you it's definitely not due to budget constraint.
No.
So your mind wonder what the reasons are for that.
And at this point in the military, there was the equivalent of like a sexual assault outreach. They were called JAG agents. However, they really couldn't do anything, and like they had no authoritative moves that they could actually perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like almost all of their budget was spent on PR, more like HR videos that you'd watch, like have a buddy when you leave base or just mm-hmm. shit like that. Not mm-hmm. any sort of actual support or outreach that they could provide.
Yeah, which just performative. Just right. trying to cover their bases and look like they're doing everything they can when clearly. Well,
doesn't it like defeat the whole purpose of what this agency is supposed to do?
Certainly.
If they have no authoritative action they can take,
mm-hmm.
then what's the point?
There is no point. It's like I said, it's performative.
Well, and it just seems it's all an image thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, how many people on the outside are going to like look in any further and be like, oh, well, what do you guys actually do?
Right.
You know, from the outside, it looks like, oh yeah, they're trying to prevent this from happening. But when it does happen, what is the action plan put in place? Oh, there isn't one.
Yep.
So Just loss of words, man. I don't understand.
I know.
So Denisha went to report the assault the next day to a first sergeant in her command. She also attempted to report the sexual assault of another female soldier in her platoon. However, the first sergeant discouraged her from filing the report. He said that Denisha could file a restricted report, meaning that Denisha could make record of the assault, but no official investigation would be triggered.
So what Again, is the point of doing that?
No point. Here, just vent. Just vent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just write it down and make you feel better.
Make you feel better, yeah.
But that's the extent we're willing to go. No negative remarks would be made on the assaulting officer's records. So just allowing someone to get away with assault, basically.
Mm-hmm. Just like okaying it, really.
What's even crazier about this whole thing is that her first sergeant informed her that if she made an unrestricted report, this would trigger that CID investigation, which for those that don't know, CID stands for Criminal Investigation Division. This would obviously set things in motion up the chain of command, but Denisha would also be charged with assault. Make that make sense. Defending yourself, you have no right in the military.
Nope, none at all.
You can be attacked by your own soldiers.
And if you report it, you will be punished as well.
Basically, yeah, that's insane. So therefore, in the eyes of the CID, Denisha defending herself by biting and mushing the face of her attackers, this would be treated just as seriously as the assault on her. After she attempted to report the assault, she texted her uncle saying that she chose not to ultimately, and that even if she did, she did not trust the chain of command. You kind of heard that in the FaceTime calls as well. Because she's like, even if I do it, what are the chances that something's actually going to be done about this?
Yeah, because in the military, you don't have a right to self-defense.
You basically give up all your rights, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else in the military can do anything to you, it seems.
And you really become a part of this organism at some point. You know, you're a cog in the machine. You're not an individual anymore. And it's more important that the military as a whole stays protected as opposed to the individuals which make up the military, which is wild.
During this time in the military, the commanding officers handled all criminal investigations up the chain of command, and they decided what was taken seriously, what warranted investigation, and who should be court-martialed and then taken to trial. There were independent investigators, however, they had really no authority at all and could only recommend punishments and next steps, which the commanders in charge just often ignored. Are we shocked? No, we're not.
So basically, they're the judge, jury, and executioner, as some would say.
Exactly. So on top of that, the commanding officers in charge were friends with those being reported, and sometimes even the assailants themselves, making a clear conflict of interest. And in addition to that, Denisha also learned in the weeks after her assault that members of her unit were sleeping with commanding officers for preferential treatment. And the female MP who joined in on her assault was still her bunkmate and was not reassigned to a new barrack. Denisha decided to stop pressing the matter with CID and the chain of command. And by the time August rolled around, she only had 1 month left in Germany before she was rotated back to Fort Stort and reunited with her family in Georgia. I think that's what makes this extra heartbreaking, is she was so close to being able to be back with her loved ones. So she constantly interacted with her sisters, her parents, her husband. She even sent Joshua videos of herself dancing to music on his birthday, and also sent Snapchats of her packed bags to her family back in August, saying that she was more than ready and very excited to be back home. But unfortunately, this is where things took a dark turn, because out of nowhere, Denisha was found dead in her locker on August 9th, hanging from her military utility belt. And her family gets this news. Keep in mind, they're so excited for her to come home. They're getting these Snapchats, all these messages, seeing her packed bags. They're just ready. They're so close. And then military grief officers show up to their house and talk to Denisha's mother, Heather, and tells her that Denisha had died due to suicide by suffocation before the CID investigation had even begun. And as you can imagine, this was beyond shocking and devastating to her family. They knew how excited and hopeful Denisha was to return home only a few short weeks later. And Heather had actually planned this huge welcome party for her when she got back, like a big celebration for everybody. And instead, Heather said, quote, "My beautiful firstborn came home in a box with no explanation."
So a lot of questions here. First of all, they came to the determination that Denisha died by suicide before the CID was ever even able to investigate. And the reason they did this was because German police initially investigated her death. And for context, they only did this for one day.
Yep.
So you can imagine they just probably came onto the base, mm-hmm. looked at the scene,
quick
said,
look.
Yep. Suicide.
That's it.
And then shut they the book rolled on out.
That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this unfortunately happens a lot in suspicious deaths, mm-hmm. Where the scene looks like a suicide, that it's just automatically assumed that's what happened. They don't even take a moment to consider who the person is, mm-hmm. or ask the family, ask people who actually knew her, mm-hmm. to see what her state of mind was like, you know, if there was any other signs.
Or if there was anything else going on. That,
right.
You know.
Or some other situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. We see that all the time. So many cases we've covered as well.
What's also interesting is that specific and very important facts were altered between the German police report and the Army's official CID report. For one, the German police investigation, which again only lasted for a day, cited Denisha's July 19th assault as a sexual and violent assault, yet the official CID report, which is over 400 pages in length, does not mention the July 19th attack as an assault. So very different conclusions there.
Uh-huh. 400 pages manages to leave that major detail out. Something that
coincidence?
Very recently happened.
What's even worse is that the Army CID report had to be FOIA requested. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't released, had to submit a Freedom of Information Act request to get a hold of it. And yet in this report, every name of the interviewed soldiers and assailants in her violent attack were redacted, meaning we can't look into the past of the individuals because we don't know who they are. And as well as the commanding officers involved in the reporting of this attack. Mm-hmm. So it's all redacted.
Everyone was protected except for Denisha.
The official CID report states that Denisha attempted to report her assault to her first sergeant and that Denisha was, quote, depressed before her rotation to Germany and told him she wanted to get out of the military for behavioral health reasons as she was suicidal. Despite the fact that her family had never once heard from Denisha that she was depressed or suicidal in any way, shape, or form. Of course, she was homesick and stressed about leaving her family behind in the States, but suicide or depression never came up in their conversations. So very different versions of the story here. The first sergeant also said that, quote, Private First Class Montgomery shared with her family and himself that she felt she was assaulted in the vehicle on July 19, 2022, and sustained scrapes and bruising, but admitted she was highly intoxicated, which not only sets up this narrative that Denisha wasn't assaulted, but quote unquote felt she was assaulted.
What does that even mean?
Well, and I think it's important that the only mention of assault in the 400 pages is with this interview with the first sergeant, who again, it's not an official Army determination that this was an assault. It's them quoting him saying, she felt she was assaulted.
And that's just from him. That's just what he's
right,
saying.
Right. Exactly. To further this narrative of suicidal ideation, the CID report states that, quote, Denisha's iPhone was utilized to conduct multiple online searches which pertain to unhappiness with unit leadership, struggles with depression, thoughts of suicide, and how to be discharged from the military. Again, Denisha had made her unhappiness with leadership and fellow soldiers known to her family, but why would she not tell them she was feeling suicidal in the weeks leading up to her rotation back to the States? Like, it's hard to imagine, especially with how close she was with her family.
Yeah.
Her husband, she has kids at home.
Yeah.
If she was really struggling to that extent, one would think she would share
them. Yes, definitely.
And they would have some inkling that that was a possibility.
Yeah. And I mean, I think her feelings of just general feelings that most people in the military experience, just missing home, you know, the grind of everything, it gets upsetting and miserable at times, but that doesn't mean you're willing to take your life. Also, with these iPhone searches, we don't even have proof that that's actually what she was searching. That's just what they're saying. There's no screenshot or anything to back it up. And I mean, they lie in these reports all the time.
Yeah, that's a great point. So it could be completely just doctored and, mm-hmm. you know, made up.
Fabricated to fit the narrative that they're trying to spin.
Right.
And then on top of that, the CID report changes the narrative surrounding Denisha's military service before the assault. Again, she only had one negative remark on her record for getting into that argument with her bunkmate over the volume of the music. And we can't even confirm, just to be clear here, that person that she had fought with over the music was the same person who was in the car who assaulted her.
Because everything's redacted. Mm-hmm. We have no way of tracking connecting. Down people.
Dude, can you imagine, as her family, how fucking infuriating that would be to not even know who these people are?
Just completely shut out.
I would lose my mind. However, the CID report stated, quote, Denisha seemed to lose interest in trying to be the best in the job and started requesting working in Area 4. And redacted soldier's name explained that Area 4 was the patrol that would do more building checks than be on the road. Redacted soldier's name stated that PFC Montgomery had taken up smoking recently to help with stress, and that while in Germany, she had a drinking issue.
Which is someone's opinion, mm-hmm. first of all.
Yeah, this is just coming from one person. And who knows what motives they have to lie. I mean, we don't know, but it's very unlikely.
But again, neither of those things necessarily mean somebody's going to take their life.
No, I mean, no.
That's just dealing with stress in a stressful situation, especially after you've been assaulted and you're not getting any support. So
Yes, which this will explain that more. So the CID report states that Denisha's room was littered with airplane bottles of vodka and that she was drunk all of the time. However, she called her family like every chance that she gets, and the only time that she was drunk was after that July 19th assault, in which she was drinking with the soldiers before the attack even happened. So they never experienced her drunk on a FaceTime call or anything, and like we said, she was checking in all the time. So there's really no proof other than people's, you know, opinions and their perspectives or whatever they're trying to build.
People protecting other people.
Exactly.
I mean, it really seems like she took her job very seriously.
Yeah.
This was like her dream that she's living.
Mm-hmm.
And she has all these plans to go back home, become a police officer. Like, why would she jeopardize that? Or just, you know, I don't know. It just seems like a convenient excuse for somebody to bring up.
Especially because before any of this happened, she was always described, and in the reporting, that she was very dedicated to her job, took it very seriously, and you know, no one ever had anything bad to say when it came to her actually performing her duties.
So it would be a very quick, 180 overnight, you know, for her, because otherwise I would feel like there had been more remarks in her past, in her records,
right?
If this had really been an ongoing issue, was she just become an alcoholic overnight?
Mm-hmm. Interesting timing for all of these details to come out, right? So then there's the narrative surrounding the assault. The CID report states that Denisha was assaulted by German citizens while in the park, not her fellow military police officers. So, oh my God, the bullshit in this just sends me up a fucking
wall. So where's the German police's investigation into these German civilians?
Yeah, let's get names of the civilians. What are you guys doing about that if that's really the case? Which obviously that's fucking fabricated. There's no way that's true. Anyway, the report goes on to say that while driving on the freeway, Denisha was intoxicated and confused and attempted to open the door of the car while traveling at highway speeds. And therefore, what Denisha described to her family and attempted to report to the CID was not an assault, but rather her colleagues trying to restrain her by burning her with a cigarette and bruising her all over her body. Okay. So the official CID report states that Denisha had, quote, a falling out with the soldiers who assaulted her. Yeah, that's putting it lightly. A falling out. God, it's so insulting the way that they tried to spin this. But again, Denisha FaceTimed her family right after she returned to her barrack. She told them that the other soldiers were choking her so hard that she thought she was going to die. And her highly bruised limbs look more like impact bruises rather than restraint. I mean, it's pretty obvious once you see it. And most notably, she was also covered in burns. So why would you burn someone with a lit cigarette if you were attempting to save their life, trying to keep them from jumping out of a moving vehicle?
Yeah, nobody's going to do that.
No, doesn't make sense. Okay, so now we're going to play the video that it's like somewhat edited of her assault. I feel that it's really important that people see what she actually went through. And of course, you're not seeing the entire thing, but it is warning.
Well,
it is
disturbing. Yeah, and I think the other reason to watch it is because it just makes all of these claims that are being made about her complete bullshit, because you can clearly see and hear in this clip that she's fighting for her life.
Denisha is seated in the front passenger seat. There's clearly an argument between Denisha and the other woman in the car. She asks to be let out of the car when the officer in the back seat appears to put his arm around her neck. In the second video, the vehicle is stopped. Denisha is exiting, trying to get away. She can be heard screaming, crying, and pleading that they leave her alone. One of the officers yells, "Get that blank blank back in the car." In the third video, Denisha is laying across the back seat on top of three seated officers. One of them, holding her down, appears to cover her mouth. Denisha can be heard saying she cannot breathe. One of the officers can be heard saying, "Stop holding her like that." Her family insists these videos are proof that Denisha was assaulted.
I watched the assault.
His first instinct is to lie and cover up, even when the truth would do. The individuals Denisha said were involved in the altercation, one of them being her roommate, were never listed as potential persons of interest in any investigation. The group had been drinking. At the time, all were stationed at Army Base Wiesbaden in Germany.
No, bro.
When she said the group got into an altercation inside the car, this video released to Denisha's family by the Army Criminal Investigation Division shows Denisha being pushed down by two people in the back seat of the car.
I can't breathe.
It's really, really hard to watch. So incredibly disturbing. But I just think it's so important that we see it for ourselves.
Yeah, and I mean, this is just what we can see, too, from this. I'm sure there's more that we haven't seen that is even worse. Because obviously we can't tell that somebody puts a cigarette on her or anything like that.
Yeah.
But clearly those injuries were there after this. You can also see in that clip that one of the officers has his arm around her neck and hand over her mouth. And when she's saying, "I can't breathe," and he's got her held really tight, almost in like a chokehold, it looks like. So
certainly not restraining her from trying to jump.
No. Well, how would she even do then that she's, you know, squashed between these guys? So, and these are trained military police officers. I mean, they're, you know, they know how to restrain people and they know how to, you know.
Her own fellow MPs and all of them in on this at once. Not a single one of them seems to try to put a stop to it.
There were issues going on at the base as well. One of the MPs involved in the assault had a master key that could access every barrack in Denisha's section, including her private quarters. On top of that, security cameras in the hallway leading up to Denisha's room were not functional starting the day she attempted to report the assault and were only restored 2 days after her body was found.
Interesting timing there, huh?
Explain that.
God, it's so obvious. It's God.
Well, and I think like with the issue of the security cameras in particular, it's like it was about a month between the time when she reported the assault and when she was found. So the fact that they didn't have working security cameras in a highly secured military barrack for that long.
Just for that specific time period.
Exactly. I think that's the, and then they just notice after they find her body and they're like, "Oh, we should restore it."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's ridiculous.
No, bullshit. I don't think anyone would believe that. Well, maybe some people, but certainly not anyone in our audience.
Well, it eliminates the ability to go see what happened leading up to her supposed suicide.
And that's exactly how they want it.
How do we know?
Any story they want.
Nobody else went into her quarters.
We can't know.
And set this up. We have no idea.
Yep.
Because according to the CID investigation, Denisha was found hanging by her utility belt in her locker. And there's even a diagram that was included in the investigation that doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. When you see, you know, this is basically a model diagram
Ridiculous.
Of what the scene looked like, and really doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
No. And like, why would she have done this in a locker of all places? It's just totally bizarre.
During a base meeting following Denisha's death, every soldier was ordered not to post about her on social media. Wonder why.
Sounds a lot like the Pat Tillman situation.
Yeah. I mean,
there wasn't social media back then, but the same type of vibe.
But they were told,
sent out, yeah.
Keep it hush. Don't tell anybody.
Don't say shit to nobody.
One soldier, LaCourtney Colvin, did make a post about Denisha's death and was found dead himself 9 days after he shared the post. The official report for him says that he suffered a seizure, but the autopsy video reportedly revealed bruises all over his body and that his face was, quote, flattened, leading to a closed casket funeral, which don't believe we can like 100% confirm some of those details, because it sounds like Ian, this is being talked about on a Facebook group or something.
Yeah, yeah. The one detail that can be confirmed is that he had a closed casket funeral.
Yeah.
So I think that alone, I mean, there's multiple reasons why you would want to have a closed casket funeral, but usually it is because the face is, you know, damaged in some way.
Or just the body, yeah. But I mean, certainly not from a seizure, unless they just chose to have a closed casket funeral for a different reason, like you said. But also, yeah, her sister, Denisha's sister, explains the situation in this TikTok as well. So this is Brooklyn speaking.
TikTok, I need your help to make this go viral. We need to elevate PFC Denisha Montgomery Smith's name. My sister, Denisha Montgomery Smith, she was on a rotation in Germany for 9 months, but she only made it to 8 months. During her stay, she went to an amusement park with four of her battle buddies, and she ended up getting brutally assaulted by all four of them. She made a FaceTime video call to us, the family, and asked us to record it. She said that she didn't trust them and she was in fear for her life. She also mentioned and literally showed us in the video that they were holding her mouth like this. And she said, I was literally afraid to die. Right after that video call, we, the family, made a call to the Red Cross to be able to get her home. That didn't do nothing. She stayed in Germany. They didn't do nothing to get her home. 21 days later, she's found dead in her barracks room. Not only did we get news that my sister died in Germany, but we also got told that she died by suicide by suffocation. Ain't it really weird how in the vehicle on the way back from the amusement park, she literally said that they were choking her and holding her like that? Their chain of command in Germany also pushed out orders for none of the soldiers to talk about it, post about it, or talk to any of the family about it. But what's crazy is this soldier right here, he did. And not only did he post about it, but my sister pulled him over and his friends in the vehicle. And she ended up letting them go without a ticket or anything by orders. But it's weird because he posted that and then he ended up dead as well in his barracks room, just like my sister. Now, a lot of people might think it's just a coincidence, but that's awfully ironic that literally right after he reposted my sister's story, after getting orders not to even talk about it, post about it or anything, he was found dead. And they ruled his death from a seizure. They said that he died from a seizure. But he was found with bruises and beating marks on him. So how do you get that? Now, I know you might not care and this might not go viral or whatever, but this has to stop. We have to make a change. It could literally be your sister, mother, aunt, uncle, brother, whoever. We need to make this stop. We need to bring justice to PFC Denisha Montgomery Smith.
LaCourtney is a hero. For going ahead and making that post for her anyway, and the fact that he lost his life, I mean, we can't prove that it's because of that, but it certainly feels that way. God, it's just so devastating. And this is totally a random side note too, but it makes me, I'm so frustrated and sad that TikTok's probably going to be banned, because it is such a useful tool for families trying to raise awareness about cases like this. Cases in general, but especially cases where there's some type of cover-up going on or lack of investigation or other just whatever bullshit with whatever agency they're dealing with. And I wonder what, you know, platform those families are going to be able to turn to, because it's been like a huge, huge resources for the families of victims of violent crime. So it's just really sad that that may not exist in the future.
Yeah, well, and just the way the algorithm works, it's so much easier for people to find stuff on TikTok, I feel like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Versus other platforms.
Mm-hmm. To get things really going viral. Yeah. I mean, before that, I would see so many families trying to use like Twitter, and it would work for some people, but Instagram doesn't really do much there. TikTok as far as, I mean, in my opinion, from what I've seen, it seems like the best platform for victims' families to try and reach people and gain awareness around their cases. It just sucks.
Which that clip looked like it went pretty viral.
Yeah, it did.
Had 1.5 million likes on it, probably a few more million views on it. Mm-hmm. So,
and a good percentage of those people, probably most, like 90 something percent, probably had never heard of Denisha's case. So Denisha's family started working with attorney, veteran, and sexual assault survivor Lindsay Knapp to help get Denisha's case reinvestigated by an independent entity like the FBI through Lindsay's foundation, which is called Combat Sexual Assault. It's excellent. Look into it. But still, over 2 years later and following policy changes, nothing has happened to reopen Denisha's case. And her death follows a longstanding issue in the military that has left countless soldiers vulnerable to sexual assault, rape, and murder. So according to The Invisible War, which is an excellent documentary, it came out in 2012, and it documents military sexual trauma, also known as MST. They were able to estimate that over 500,000 women, 500,000, had been sexually assaulted while serving in the military. However, since this is an estimation of sexual trauma since women were allowed permanent status in the military in 1948, the vast majority of the assaults were, you know, went completely unreported. So the number is much, much higher than that. And in 2021, the Department of Defense reported over 35,900 cases of sexual assault in the military. However, independent estimates suggest that the true number is 2 to 4 times higher than that. Still, even with the official number, it is far more likely for a woman to be sexually assaulted by a comrade than she is to be wounded by an enemy in combat. Wrap your mind around that, that the true danger lies from your own, oh my God. I can't even get the words out.
Yeah, your own comrades.
Yeah.
The people you work with, the people you're supposed to.
That's your biggest threat.
You know, go to war with.
Mm-hmm.
Die with.
Yep.
Die for. It's just, it's shocking.
And then, of course, out of those reported cases, the vast majority led to no consequences at all for the accused. As previously mentioned, all crimes between soldiers were handled by the chain of command, meaning higher ranking soldiers in the same company or unit. Therefore, as a result, those adjudicating cases of sexual assaults usually knew the perpetrator or committed the act themselves.
According to the Department of Defense's report on sexual assault within the military for 2010, mind you, so we're talking almost 15 years ago, there were 2,410 unrestricted reports of sexual assault, meaning it would trigger an internal investigation up the chain of command. Of the 2,410, the Department of Defense identified 3,233 perpetrators, for which the chain command dropped 910 of those charges. Of those that remained, only 529 were court-martialed, and out of those 529 who actually went to trial, only 175 did any jail time whatsoever. So 175 out of 3,233 perpetrators. 175.
It's hard to even wrap your mind around those numbers. What the fuck?
On top of that, in 2012, 15% of incoming male naval recruits had committed rape or sexual assault prior to joining the military, meaning the Navy admitted thousands of known rapists and predators into their ranks, which I didn't even know that was even a thing. I thought that disqualified you from joining the armed services, but
you would think.
I don't know. I don't know if it was like desperate for recruits. I don't know what it is. And they're just like, well, we'll just take anybody, criminal record or not, especially something along those lines of violent assault, yeah. Sexual assault.
Like, ah, you're fine. You'll fit in here.
Well, and this is as explained in The Invisible War. They talk about how violent predators, sexual predators often choose the military because they are fully aware of mm-hmm. the ability to get away with it.
Yep.
It like they describe it as basically like shooting fish in a barrel. Like you get them there and it becomes a playground for them. They know they can commit these crimes and completely get away with it.
Yep. Yep. So just continuing, just making the issue even more. God. Oh, God. It's just so frustrating, especially with the amount of our tax dollars that go towards our military, and that there's nothing makes you feel really hopeless and helpless.
Don't even get started on that. There's a lot of things that are frustrating about that.
Yeah.
And since women were allowed permanent service in the military in 1948, cases of sexual assault in the military weren't taken seriously until the 1991 Tailhook incident. So the annual Tailhook Symposium is a convention held every year in Las Vegas for service members who served aboard naval aircraft carriers, and mainly Navy pilots would attend. However, women who attended the 1991 convention reported being put through a gauntlet in which they had to walk down hotel hallways lined with dozens of men who each took turns assaulting them. At the 1991 symposium, 83 women and 7 men reported being sexually assaulted while at the convention. Though the gauntlet likely occurred during most prior years as well, and out of all the officers named in the 90 assaults, less than 10 were court-martialed. And guess what? None of them did any jail time. There's even a picture, and you can see one of these Navy service members wearing a t-shirt that says, "Women are property," it looks like.
Jesus Christ.
Which I think just kind of cements the fact that that's almost like, yes, the point of the Tailhook Symposium was to just have a convention for Navy pilots. But the fact that there's a printed t-shirt that they could wear kind of cements the fact that they looked forward to this all year as like, oh, we can run the gauntlet again. We can sexually assault again. Like, that was really the point of holding this convention.
Yep. Certainly conveys the message, that fucking t-shirt. God. Can you imagine? I shouldn't be so surprised in the world that we live in, but for a man to just openly wear a shirt like that, it still just gets me. I'm just like, just openly saying who the fuck you are. It's so insane.
But like the Tailhook Symposium, numerous units within the military not only allow rape and sexual assault through a lack of investigation, but many encourage the behavior. An independent report of Fort Hood found that the sexual assault prevention program was, quote, ineffective, and that, quote, there is strong evidence that incidents of sexual assault and sexual harassment at Fort Hood are significantly underreported. And finally, quote, the command climate of Fort Hood has been permissive of sexual harassment and sexual assault. So it's just rampant, and it's been that way for a long time. In fact, it's well known, you know, we've talked to people in the military. You're like, oh yeah, Fort Hood, definitely known for that stuff. It's like, when is that going to change? You know, and it's interesting because the military really tries to convince the public that, you know, everybody in the military is an upstanding citizen and is, you know, making all these sacrifices and everything, which of course all the good ones are. But the fact that there's literally criminal rapists and predators in the military that are just taking advantage of the lax rules and lack of investigation is sickening. And you would think they'd want to clean that up. But my guess is because this has been going on for so long, there's still people in charge from the very beginning,
right,
who don't want to see that culture change. Mm-hmm. The military industrial complex is such a massive beast that it's like, where would you even begin? You know, how would you even go about doing that? But it seems like there should probably be some laws passed, right? Some new laws that make the punishments far stricter, that you get kicked out of the military, you get dishonorably discharged if you do these things, and there's better ways to report it. You know, protect American citizens who are making these sacrifices for their country. Why not protect them? I don't get it.
Like, the thing that gets me is, I think regardless of what you feel of the military's actions, I think when you look at soldiers like Denisha, you know, who join because they do believe, like, this is, not only will this be good for my career, but they're upstanding citizens who want to serve their country. Again, whether you believe that's what the military does or not, that's what those individuals believe. And the fact that then they get there and they are just subjected to rampant
abuse, violence, sexual assault,
everything.
Yep.
Yeah, it's I don't know, feels like a big scam, big lie. You know, they suck you in and then you just get completely screwed, or worse. It's just, I don't know. And I've listened to a lot of ex-military members, including people in special, you know, special ops and things like that. And even those guys, a lot of them are like, there's so much bullshit. There's so much bullshit. And, you know, it's like you're just working for the very few at the top that don't give a shit about you whatsoever, that it's all political. It's all just a sort of a sick game for them at the end of the day to further their careers and further their prestige and, you know, whatever it is. Who even fucking knows at this point what's going on, but I don't know. It feels like it's dramatically changed over the years, and especially once they, you know, why didn't they think through, you know, if you're going to allow women into the military, why didn't they think through the obvious issues that might happen if they do that and make sure that women are protected and are treated equally if we do allow them in? But it just seemed like, oh, welcome to the club. Nothing's going to change. We've been acting this way. We've been acting insane for years and doing all this fucked up shit. So you're just going to have to get used to it, basically. And now they're trying to do some PR moves of, oh, well, we, you know, have posters in the bases. You know, just, we give training. People can see the posters. We have a couple of videos. It's like, what does that do? You know? And how does that deal with something that's actually happened? It doesn't. It's meaningless, really, is what it is. Because is anybody taking it seriously if there's no repercussions? There's no accountability, no consequences for committing crimes.
Nope, you can just get away with whatever.
Makes no sense whatsoever.
Nope. On top of that, the problem of sexual assault within the military is more unique when considering women of color, specifically Black women. Unfortunately, Army reporting treats women as a homogenous group, so there's not a lot of reporting that accounts for the cultural background and racial concerns. According to a paper titled, quote, Black Women in the Military: Prevalence, Characteristics, and Correlates of Sexual Harassment, the authors found that 1 in 5 Black women were sexually assaulted in the military during 2018. 1 in 5. And while that number is lower than that of other women of color within the military, only 43% of them reported the harassment or assault to authority, with the majority of them urged by their chain of command to make an informal report. And 48% said that this report led to rules on harassment being explained to everyone in their unit, and an equal number reported that they were encouraged to drop the issue. 44% of the respondents said that their comrades treated them worse, avoided them, or blamed them for the assault or harassment. And on top of that, the report found that junior officers were more likely to experience sexual harassment or misconduct, and often other women would join in on the harassment or assault. Just like in Denisha's case. The report also found that the sexual assault of Black women was treated less seriously than white women within the military. Are we shocked? Absolutely not. And that instances of sexual assault and harassment against Black women were less common in units led by Black women. In addition, the RAND Corporation found that veterans who screen positive for MST have a higher risk of dying by suicide than those who don't. Lindsay Knapp's foundation, Combat Sexual Assault, calls this phenomenon, quote, murder by suicide. According to The Invisible War, the documentary you mentioned earlier, a higher percentage of women who experience MST have developed PTSD when compared to men who have developed PTSD after combat. So that's a pretty staggering statistic right there.
So with all that in mind, it's important to note that Denisha's case is not the first high-profile military sexual assault that led to death, but rather a long-standing trend within the military's permittance of sexual trauma, specifically when it comes to Black women and women of color. In 2004, Lavina Johnson joined the Army after graduating high school. Her father was a veteran, and she felt compelled to join like many other Americans after the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. Lavina was stationed in Balad, Iraq in 2005, and after only 8 weeks stationed overseas, Lavina was found dead just 8 days before her 20th birthday. The Army immediately ruled her death as a suicide. However, they refused to release any official documents surrounding her death until they were forced to by a FOIA request. That's my whole thing, is if it's like, why are they hiding it? If that's what it is, then why not just be transparent about it? Why, you know, why are you trying to still keep? And I guess the argument would be, you know, either they're covering up what really happened, or they just don't want people to know, you know, for recruitment purposes, mm-hmm. that their soldiers are, you know, taking their own lives, mm-hmm. especially this soon into service.
And just probably less support from civilians as well.
Lavina's autopsy determined that she had a broken nose, loose teeth, and bruises all over her body, and the fatal gunshot wound was inconsistent with suicide. On top of all that, it was observed that she was subjected to chemical burns that were done to cover up evidence of sexual assault, and bloody footprints were found outside of her tent. However, despite Lavina's death and other high-profile incidents like the friendly fire killing of Pat Tillman, which caused lawmakers to pressure the Department of Defense to change the way they handle military crimes, Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta refused, citing that it would negatively affect, quote, military readiness. Okay. Really? Even as of 2023, Lavina's father, John, was petitioning to change the death date on her tombstone to the correct day rather than the one put out by the DOD. He said, quote, "To look at the cobblestone and see the wrong date is just awful. It's awful." And even more recent cases highlight the permittance of sexual assault in the military. Private First Class Asia Graham was raped by a fellow soldier while she was unconscious only 5 months after joining the Army on December 30th, 2019. After the chain of command forced her to drop the report, she moved in with her brother off base for several months. She seemed to be okay, though her brother noted that, quote, her light had dimmed. However, Asia was forced to return to base only a few months later, the same base where her rapist was still stationed. Which, how does that make any sense? At the very least, move her away from the person who did this to her. Why is that so hard, even? Asia began using substances to cope with her trauma, and she was found dead of an overdose on December 31st, 2020, a year and a day after her sexual assault. Asia's rapist, Christian Alvarado, was charged with 7 counts of sexual assault, including some from before he joined the Army. In 2021, Alvarado was sentenced to 18 years in prison. So, perfect example of the military allowing somebody with horrific crimes in their past to join and further commit horrific crimes.
And then her being forced to still be on the same base with him.
That's crazy to me. That seems like a simple fix that they could do.
Yeah, they're not going to get rid of that motherfucker, then at least protect her by putting him somewhere or her somewhere else. Just what?
I think the only thought process the military had with that choice was that if they did move him, that would in and of itself be an admittance that the rape occurred, which they've already told her to drop the report.
Yep.
So again, it's just any excuse for that. Exactly.
Doesn't everybody know by this point in time that the military has tons of issues, has tons of fucked up things going on? Like, why are they still trying so hard to protect that, which seems to make it worse anyways?
I think it's because we haven't even really scratched the surface. Like, we know a few instances. We know how bad it is.
So they're worried about absolutely terrible shit. And I think Ian and I were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
They're worried about if they provide more transparency, that transparency will lead to us wanting even more transparency, which could lead us down a very dark road, mm-hmm. specifically talking about war crimes committed, yep. and atrocities mm-hmm. committed across the world by the US military. Mm-hmm. And it'd be really, really upsetting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They want to keep us in the dark as much as possible. So even though they know that, you know, we get instances here and there, we see glimpses, they don't want the full picture to be revealed.
And, you know, thinking back to Pat Tillman, again, like, the reason Lavina's death was finally, like, the FOIA request finally went through was because it was pressured to release during the Pat Tillman hearings, mm-hmm. because they were like, what the fuck is up with this?
Yeah.
And Pat Tillman, you know, if we remember, the whole reason they wanted to spin that story to be like he was a war hero who died in combat was because the Abu Ghraib scandal of us abusing and torturing prisoners was about to release, and the DOD knew that. So they wanted to spin this Pat Tillman story so that wouldn't be exposed.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, Josh, like if they do allow even just that inch of more transparency, I think they're worried of other Abu Ghraibs being mm-hmm. exposed, other war crimes that we don't even know about. Again, we only know the things that have been leaked.
The tip of the mountain, you mm-hmm. know? They don't want the whole the whole thing to come crashing down.
Well, I think we all can assume that they're what the worst of the worst is at this point.
Yeah. I mean, they know that we're assuming, but we well, don't it's also, know the actual facts. We don't yeah. know that we can't, like, you know, and hold I'm them sure, accountable.
Well, and I don't know, because it's, I think the other thing too is if all this, you know, horrific stuff comes out about the military and what they actually do, are people still going to want to join?
Oh yeah, that's a huge
and then if too. I mean, I know, like, I believe recruitment numbers are still relatively down from where they were in previous administrations. So, you know, that's something they don't want to do. And obviously, I don't know if I'd be in favor of like a draft coming back where they start forcing young Americans to join the military.
I hope you wouldn't be at all in favor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to do that. Certainly not. But but my point in saying that is, could that be why? You know what I mean? Like, could they, you know, is it better that we don't know what's going on and that they people still join on their own?
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's just
volition,
huge...
or is it better if we do know and then they just start forcing us to participate?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's becoming more evident than ever as time goes on, just about how our servicemen and women are treated, not only while they're in the service, but once they return as
yeah,
well.
That's a whole other issue,
you know,
yeah.
leads to those as well. But yeah, I think it's a multitude of reasons why they wouldn't
well,
want us to know.
That's a great point you brought up too, because in that Invisible War documentary, they were highlighting a veteran who she was sexually assaulted mm-hmm. and it, just really horrific stuff happened to her. And they show her experience with like the VA. Just trying to, you know, her face got, you know, severely injured through these assaults that she went through. And she's got like nerve damage. She's got all this stuff going on. And the VA is an absolute shit show and can't even like figure out what's going on with her. She has to like spend all this money to go back and forth to different doctors and stuff. And just the whole VA thing is a whole other can yeah. of worms. But
yeah,
it's just all bad.
I know.
From top to bottom. Obviously, there's lots of great people. I have family that served in the military. You know, I'm not saying I probably sound anti-military, but I understand why it exists. I think it's important to protect our nation, and I definitely respect those who serve. It's absolutely a sacrifice, but it just the system, the military-industrial complex is just so out of control.
So highly flawed.
So unhinged and unregulated. No checks and balances when it comes to that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They control absolutely everything that it just, it's this monster mm-hmm. that we're all just left with and there's nothing we can do about it.
I know. Yeah, and it's really frustrating because we always try to support the VA as well because we know how bad veterans need that support. So like all of our, we make a lot of donations to them, not only like monetarily, but also just... We make any type
yeah,
of
personal donations.
We have like a VA pickup like pretty much every other month. But I often wonder like how much of that is actually
making it to yeah. veterans and their families. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's such a complex issue.
It is. It's so massive. It's hard to even know like where to begin. And it just makes you feel so, so helpless, especially when you're supporting it essentially just by paying taxes in this country. And what are your options? To stop and go to jail?
Nope, can't do that.
So, yeah. And also, we wanted to bring up probably the most high-profile case, and that is the 2020 disappearance and death of Vanessa Guillen. I don't know if we covered it a mile higher. I did on my show, God, that case has just really stuck with me. I'm still in contact every once in a while with her family, and it's just one of the most brutal, brutal cases I've ever covered, and it taught me so much. About just
eye-opening.
How much corruption and assaults.
Because this took place at Fort Hood, mm-hmm. which is notorious for
yeah.
sexual assaults and mm-hmm. you know just permitted violence there.
Yep. Vanessa was stationed at Fort Hood and she went missing on April 22nd, 2020. She had previously told her mother that she was being sexually harassed by an unnamed sergeant and her mother urged her to report it. But of course, Vanessa was too fearful to do that. She feared, quote, retaliation. If she reported the assault to the CID. Several soldiers also went missing during the search for Vanessa, and two of them were also found deceased.
Very, very sketchy, too. Their deaths were
mm-hmm. the whole
almost like
other conversation.
just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On June 19th, Private Gregory Weddle Morales, his remains were found buried in a field. And then on July 17th, Private Mayhor Morta's remains were found near Stillhouse Hollow Lake. On June 30th, Vanessa's remains were found along the Leon River, and it was just
brutal,
horribly brutal. She had been dismembered and buried under concrete, but animal activity had resurfaced her remains. The soldier who had assaulted her, Aaron Robinson, giant piece of shit, was detained by the CID, but he was able to escape. And like the coward he is, committed suicide before he could be court-martialed. And then his girlfriend, another giant piece of shit, a woman named Cecily Ogliar, had aided in the cover-up of Vanessa's body and was sentenced to 30 years in prison. And in 2021, the Vanessa Guillen Military Justice Improvement and Increasing Prevention Act was introduced into Congress.
By Senator Gillibrand.
Yes. Yep. And that would officially criminalize sexual assaults in the military and remove the decision to prosecute cases of MST away from the chain of command and in independent investigations. And I also just wanted to shout out my audience. We were able to raise a ton for Vanessa. I can't remember the
over
exact
60,000.
Was it over?
Yeah, wow, I think the donation that we were able to make, because you did a merch campaign.
Yeah, I did. With stickers. We had a great graphic designer that worked on that.
I just looked at the numbers again today. It was $92,000 raised. And then after, of course, the expenses to ship and print all of that merchandise, the total profits was $60,000, though.
Yeah, that we were able to just get directly to her family.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We just wired it right to them. And I know from talking to them that a lot of that went towards them being able to travel back and forth to D.C. because it was a long road to getting this bill passed. But President Biden did sign the act into law at the end of 2022, and it went into effect in 2023. And while we do not have an official report from the DOD for sexual assault cases in the military since the law went into effect, early numbers from military academies indicate the reported sexual assaults have decreased. So there's some good news
hopefully
there.
Hopefully there's some prevention
we're
going on.
Trending in the right direction. Yeah. However, the law only covers sexual assaults after 2023, meaning Denisha's case will not be reopened under the new law, and those involved in her attack are still unnamed to this day.
I don't know what it's going to take for this. It really seems like some other agency, Department of Justice, or, you know, I don't know, FBI potentially, it needs to get involved. Although I know it's pretty rare that the FBI gets involved. It's usually Department of Justice or Department of Defense, some type of investigative agency in that realm needs to get involved and re-examine. I think another autopsy, if that's possible, might be worthwhile to try to get some more information from an independent medical examiner. But I think, unfortunately, because there was very little investigation done at the scene, there's likely tons of evidence that's been lost or just was never collected, which is very unfortunate. But the family members of Denisha Montgomery Smith are still looking for answers, and they're currently working with legal advocate and founder, as we mentioned, of Combat Sexual Assault, Lindsay Knapp, to reopen Denisha's case and hopefully have it investigated by a group outside the Army, such as the ones I just mentioned. The family currently has a GoFundMe for future legal costs and to exhume Denisha's body for a second independent autopsy to be conducted after the first gave inconclusive results.
So, of course, we will have that linked below if you would like to get involved and help their family with these efforts. I'm sure they could use all the funding they could get. We have also reached out to them. We're hoping to connect with them and get them a HOPE grant through the Higher Hope Foundation as well. So if any of her family out there sees this, we would love to help. So, yeah, please reach out.
We are also currently in contact with Lindsay Knapp's organization to hopefully process an Empower grant with them through the foundation to help out their mission. But Denisha's sister, Brooklyn, left the Army following the events of her sister's death. And we have a clip we want to show you of her talking to ABC News about what she does to keep Denisha's memory alive for her children. Because that's probably one of the saddest things about this, is that there are children that don't have their mother anymore, which is heartbreaking. But let's hear from Brooklyn.
How do you keep her memory alive for yourself and for your nephews?
I just
bring her up whenever I see something beautiful. Although the younger ones might not remember their mom, all they need is just like the little things to remind them who she is. Beautiful sunset. Look how beautiful your mom looks today. Look at that beautiful butterfly. She's watching you right now. That's her.
God, my heart just breaks for all of them, and especially for her children. And I don't know how, you know, filled in they are since they are young, but I'm assuming that as they get older, they will learn the truth of what happened, and to not have that justice for her, for them, just, it's horrific. It's
horrific, and it's extremely maddening. I can't imagine the anger, frustration, because it does feel hopeless. You know, it feels like, what can we do?
And that feeling of not being able to do anything about it, not getting that justice, and knowing that your loved one's death is being covered up, that you're being lied to, is just such salt in the wound on top of that grief. It's horrible.
Yeah, and I think based on everything that we know, and when you compare the reports, there's just so many things that stick out to, that's really hard to come to any other conclusion other than this seems like this was a staged suicide scene, and somebody was concerned about, which is the one thing that I get tripped up about, that someone was concerned about her potentially getting them in trouble for the assault.
Yep.
And so they just made sure that she was never able to speak about it again or escalate that issue.
Or it was a situation where another assault happened, things got out of hand, and
something
went
worse,
too far, and then it was staged to look like something else after the fact. I mean, there's so many different reasons you could come up with for why someone would have staged this, but I don't know about you guys, but personally, I don't believe any of the bullshit narrative they gave. I 100% believe that Denisha was murdered.
Yeah, especially when you fact check everything else and you realize, and if you just know about some of these other cases, it's just so obvious that this shit happens all the time.
Hopefully one day the truth
there's
comes
no
out.
Accountability no accountability for people's actions, for crimes.
I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable with anyone in my life, especially my own children, serving in our military. I'd be terrified.
You know, and I think the Vanessa Guillen act is obviously, like, that's a step in the right direction.
Huge step.
It's fantastic that it happened. And I think still the military needs to address other concerns, like, so they don't occur in the first place. Like, yes, I'm sure that people facing consequences will bring the number of sexual assaults down. But I mean, like that paper mentioned, the fact that the military does not take into account racial concerns, gender concerns, like, you know, there's this idea that, oh, you're just a soldier when you join the military.
Yep.
And of course, like, yeah, that's good in theory, but you can't remove the soldier from the world, you know? And so those concerns are, frankly, like, exasperated.
Yeah.
And so I think there needs to be other work done. So, like the paper mentioned, in units where Black women lead, there's less likely to be assault against Black women.
That tells you so much.
Right. And those concerns, those allegations were taken more seriously. And so I think that there needs to be, like, just on the structure of the military itself, there needs to be way more work done, like, no matter what, before it even gets to an investigation.
Yeah, we certainly have a long way to go. And I don't want to sound hopeless. I just frankly am, with a lot of things in our country, of course, but I don't know, the more I learn about the military, I don't know. It's so massive, so powerful, and
if you're going to run it like a business, then it needs to be treated like every other business, you know. Every business in this country has to adhere to certain laws, regulations, human resources, and all of these other things that are put into place to, you know, ensure that this stuff doesn't happen, and when it does happen, you have some type of course of action you can take, right?
Yeah.
You can get an attorney and sue the shit out of your business. Or, you know, if something criminally happens within a business, then that person can be held criminally liable for what they did. And it's this bizarre thing of where the military is just somehow excluded from all these other rules that mm-hmm. every other business has to abide by because it's the military. But yet it is a business. It runs it, you know, like a business, but it runs it like the way businesses were run 100 plus years ago, where, you know, there's this insane power dynamic and, you know, unless you're one of the top officials, nobody gives a shit about you and you have no power. And this ability to, you know, take action against you if you bring up something, you know, you bring up an issue or retribution for calling something out that is not legal, you know, and then...
Or you could possibly end up dead.
Right. End up dead because somebody's going to, you know, doesn't want you to do anything about it. So those are just very basic things that need to be eradicated from the military moving forward.
And just a lot of our government in general. I mean, we just talked about last week, the Pentagon failing every audit.
Right. No accountability.
No.
No transparency.
Or not last week, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
There's just... break, but...
Yeah. There's just... I think what the American people want and everybody wants is more accountability and transparency from our government. And we need to make it a more fair, even playing field for people and get rid of this power dynamic. I just think, will that ever happen? And
that's where I'm at.
That's the difficult part. It's been this way since the beginning of time. Is it going to change anytime soon without drastic action, which who knows even what that is?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't see it happening for foreseeable future.
Which I think the only thing you can do, and this is why, you know, you can't get too cynical about everything, is the only thing we can do is make our voices heard, continue talking about these things and getting it out to as many people as possible. Because I think the only real power we have is power in numbers and the power of the population, that if we can come together on these issues, which are should be, you know, across the aisle, over the aisle, under the aisle, whatever you want to call it, everybody should be, you know, on the same page when it comes to human rights and, you know, being treated fairly and being safe in your workplace and not being worried about being murdered or taken advantage of. Like, these are all basic things I think every human being cares about, because every human being has a brother, a sister, a wife, a daughter, you name it, that could potentially be in a position like this. So why wouldn't we want to, you know? And I think what happens is there's a resistance. There, you know, these elected officials, they do their best to, some of them do their best to make a change, but then they face all this resistance. And I think it goes back to Ian's point. I think what needs to happen is we need a change of leadership, and we need some, you know, more equal representation amongst, you know, different types of people, you know, like in order to change these ways, we have to bring in new people and new ideas from different backgrounds, put our heads together, stop being fucking selfish, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's a giant feat, you know, it's a lot to go up against. And that's why, again, huge shout out to this family. For, you know, not only are you dealing with all of this grief, but to go up against this machine and fight as hard as you can. And to people like Lindsay Knapp, I mean, just some of the bravest amongst us to try and make a difference. And I really hope that one day you guys get that justice and get really the answers that you deserve. To not even have the answers is just horrific. But we definitely want to hear from all of you, want to hear your thoughts on this case and the military in general, all of the topics that we brought up today. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussion in the comments. And that's, again, why it's so important to talk about this and to have these discussions, whether you agree or disagree or have different points to bring up. We love hearing from all of you. But that is going to be it for today's episode. I know that was a heavy one, but again, very important. We will be back next week, of course. And until then, keep on taking your mind a mile higher.